Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Mon.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Ben Bateman.
What's up, everybody? We're back. We got a Modern Pro Tour. Holy smokes.
That was wonderful.
It was an exciting show.
It was swell.
I really enjoyed that. It was so much fun to watch. It had been so long. And man, it was like, there's never been a better Modern Pro Tour. There's never been a sweeter set of decks.
Sure.
I mean, we had 7 strategies in the top 8. We had former tier 2 strategies breaking through to tier 1. You had freaking Hollow One breaking through. You had multiple young Pyromancer decks.
Yeah, we had 2. Like, it was kind of like there was 4. And this is me stating that Humans is an established metagame deck, which I think we can kind of insinuate it was.
It is now after like 4 months.
Well, it definitely
months.
Was. Yeah. So I would say there was like 4 established metagame decks and with 5 representations of them, and then 3 kind of brews that are like sneaky. This is a new archetype that didn't exist before.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it was exciting, and we are going to talk all about it with you guys. If you are wondering, because on Anchor I talked a little bit about this other episode that talks about the Magic movie, you guys will actually hear that audio later. We just decided.
Next week.
Yeah, we decided to
do the Pro Tour coverage
it.
For during the week of the Pro Tour and
yes.
save that one for another week.
Exactly. So we switched those, so you'll hear that at some point if in case anybody was curious about it, though it is very cool. But the episode we're talking about today is going to be the Pro Tour review. We're going to be talking about the deck that won. Spoiler alert, Lantern. We're going to be talking about some of the top archetypes, the face of Modern, the future of it going forward, our ban predictions based on the success of certain decks at the Pro Tour, and what you can expect by the next big marquee Modern tournament as far as maybe unbannings go. So let's before we get into all of that, Alex, where can everybody find you?
I am at Kess Wiley. We are at the MM Cast. You are at Ben Bateman Media. That is true on Twitter and Instagram.
Look at you.
You can also check out our Facebook group. We are the official Masters of Modern Facebook group. We're at 3,500 people, I think, at this point, are coming close.
The conversations are getting downright unruly sometimes.
Yep. we are bringing on new moderators this week, so they'll even, you know, it's a community that's growing fast and it's really exciting. Make sure to check out our Patreon. It's important because that's how we pay for the things that make this keep happening. It's
and
how
we
pay
just,
for our Creative
we don't just
Cloud Suite
say
account.
That, by the way. Like I know that probably some people think we just say that, but we don't just say that we need the Patreon help. We do need the Patreon help.
Correct.
Otherwise, we're just hemorrhaging money to come talking to you guys about Magic.
Which
we did for a long time.
Yeah, we did for a long time. I mean, you know, we have updated Creative Cloud, so that's like $60 a week. Or a month. So there's different costs that just come with this podcast existing, and we definitively appreciate all the help and assistance we can get from the fans, and we love all of you for it.
Yeah. Additionally, you guys can check out Kesco. That is Alex's company that I work with. It is an awesome company. Toys, games.
Yeah, you can go. You can literally go to a Target
right now.
Yeah,
Alex
Super Party Bell at thinkgeek.com, or you can go to Target and buy ice hoops and other crazy things. It's definitely really exciting.
Yeah, so that's the thing. We have products now in major stores that you might just see the name Cass and go, really? If you didn't even realize it, but that's the thing. And then last but not least, Anchor.fm is this free app that's available. It's like Twitter meets podcasting. I run the Masters of Modern account on it, and we have about 10 minutes of extra content a day about Modern that you can just go find the 10 minutes of Modern station on that app, and you'll get it. A lot of you guys complain that I don't archive and turn them into podcasts. I'm not very good at it. Every few weeks I go in and I go archive all the old episodes so that they're available on the podcast store. But as it stands now, if you want, you can just download Anchor.fm. You can even listen to it on your desktop every day. And listen to the content. So I already did like a little short top 8 review there. But anyway, let's get into the show. Let's talk about this Pro Tour top 8. So I know that you and I have both been very busy this last week. Did you get to watch any like full matches or just some highlights?
I watched some highlights.
Yeah.
This week, my birthday was this last weekend, so I was doing birthday things.
There was drinking involved.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe you, maybe other people. I don't know.
I don't know. I wasn't there.
That's cool. Your birthday was fun. It was a good party.
I had fun.
It was good to see everybody.
Yeah, there was one of the funny things is that there was a guy that a friend of a friend brought, or just a friend brought, and he hung out with us the whole evening. Even came early, so he would like helped set up, went through the whole event, and like by the very end of the day, like plays a ton of Magic and spent the entire party with a bunch of people that played Magic, but like didn't tell anyone the whole time and didn't know realize. That anyone, because he was like doing the whole thing where you're like, I don't bring up the fact that I play Magic in every social circle right. I go to, but like it was like this was your moment. There was like Magic judges, there was
he didn't even
store
realize.
People that ran stores. It was just he just went through the whole thing.
Alex
so
is basically
tell everyone
you
play Magic. That's
Alex
the key
is basically
to the story.
Telling you that he is Magic royalty. He knows all of the store owners and all of
true.
The judges.
I would never make that statement.
And they all attend his birthday party.
No. The local Magic community, some members of it made it to the party.
I didn't play any Magic at the party, but I played Jenga.
I played a lot of Jenga. We played a lot of, there's a game called Secret Hitler that it's really fun.
Didn't get to play that
we
one.
Played a game of Super Party Battle.
Yeah,
a
I saw that
A game that you
happening.
Can buy on ThinkGeek.com.
It's available right now.
yeah, so that's what happened there. But the Pro Tour
yeah, we
was
just
much
tangented.
More fascinating.
Yeah.
I read a lot about it.
It was crazy, man. I mean,
it
there
was really cool.
There was so much cool stuff. I mean, so many like sort of like weird highlights. Like I'm pretty sure John Finkel played Tron. I'm almost positive he
did. Yes, he did. You're
I didn't
correct.
Get to watch any of his matches, but that's not a Finkel deck. We had Lantern win the Pro Tour. So I guess where do we start? Probably the thing to do is to break down, first of all, the top eight decks. We will start off by saying that the War of Invention version of Lantern won the Pro Tour. And that is... What do you think? Is your knee-jerk reaction that that's a positive or a negative for Modern? Or is it a neutral?
The net negative is by winning a Pro Tour, there is going to be a significant amount of the Modern player base or incoming Modern players that are going to come to it and be like, oh, what deck should I build? And it's going to be the one that won the Pro Tour. And they're like, oh, that's obviously the deck I should be playing, so I'm going to buy it. And that's going to cause two major things to happen. The first one is a bunch of people that are not good at playing Lantern or are new to the deck will be playing it in Grand Prix format.
It is unbelievably difficult to pilot correctly.
It is very difficult to play correctly. The less you play it correctly, the slower turns go. So the games can be drawn out. You know, it's not like Eggs, though, where like Eggs took a few turns, but all of those turns took 20 minutes long. This is going to be much more of a, they're going, you know, Lantern takes like 600 turns and they're all very quick. But if you play any of them slowly, you might have issues at a GP. So the net negative, and like people are asking for bans, and when we're going to get really into that in a second, but the real negative that could happen is that it just slows down tournament play because you have a bunch of new players playing this deck that, you know, it was really fun. It's really cool. It's awesome that it won a Pro Tour. Congratulations to both the winner and the people that worked really hard to make that deck a thing happen. And that's great. But I do think that we are going to run into a situation where tournament play is going to be hurt, at least in the beginning, because so many new players are going to be picking this deck up. And it's a deck that, when played badly or slowly, can be detrimental to a tournament.
Yeah, you mentioned Eggs, and again, I probably should save the full-on Lantern discussion for the second half of the podcast, because it's not really what this podcast is about. I mean...
I don't know, we should just talk about it now. We're here.
Okay.
why, like...
Just because, like, people, like, don't want to... Like, should it be banned? Is it a problem? Like, I wanted to save it, but it's fine. So, all right.
I think the world wants to talk about that.
You mentioned...
There's two types of people. They're the people that think nothing should be banned and are really angry when people want something to be banned. And then there's the other half of people that want things that do well to be banned and don't want something like this to be good.
So you mentioned Eggs, and that is the, and a lot of people keep comparing this deck to Eggs. And so there's a couple reasons that it's similar, and there's a couple reasons that it's distinctly different.
Totally.
Eggs was 100% a solitaire deck. The deck basically didn't interact with you. It could. I had seen it do that a couple times. Like occasionally, if you needed to, you could like ghost quarter a land, or you could like, I don't know, use your spell bomb
like
to like kill a creature.
Cards, but yeah, no, minimal. But it was Storm, but worse.
But yeah, but it was Storm. And so Eggs was annoying because like a good Eggs player could, well within their rights, stall out game one knowing they were going to win and even kind of troll their opponent into like an inexperienced opponent not understanding how the deck worked. The playing player could just like play, take 42 minutes and then just draw the second game pretty much on purpose, win easy. That was on camera. That happened a lot. And so they didn't like that. There was no reason for them to have a solitaire deck that could win a Pro Tour, so they got rid of it.
Well, and one of the issues, that's not even totally the case. It was banned also in the same way that Top is banned. You know, Top wasn't banned from power level reasons. Now, there's an argument that it probably would be too good, but its original banning was that was based off of old extended, and that's that it ruins Grand Prix because
yep.
people slow play with it. It adds 30,000 steps to every turn. It makes a game last significantly longer. With eggs, the problem is even after turns happens, you can have three opportunities to have 20-minute long turns. So that means every single round has an additional 60 minutes-ish, because it's variable
right.
between how many players are playing eggs, added to the round to let that player finish the tournament, which means you're adding 9 hours a day to a tournament, which makes it 100% unsustainable. It's
yep.
a deck that literally the way tournaments are run in modern days does not function in the environment for a professional match tournament.
Right. So,
and that's the big issue with why it was banned.
That's eggs. Now, the difference between that deck and this deck is that to win with this deck, every single turn, if you're an inexperienced player, is a little bit of a chess match of knowing which cards to leave on top because you have the top card of their library revealed, which cards to get rid of, what things to respond to, what's your play pattern with War of Invention. There's a lot of opportunity for your opponent to respond and blow up your win condition. If they get rid of your Lantern of Insight and you don't have another Lantern, you don't have another way to recover, I've seen it happen. Affinity decks get so close to losing and then win all of a sudden on one turn by like getting under an Ensnaring Bridge because of a land and making their opponent keep a card in their hand. Like, it's not that impossible to do.
Or just have Ornithopter attack and then move an equipment or modular counters to it at instant speed.
So it's a much, much, much more skill-intensive deck to pilot to the win. However, I don't think that Wizards' response is going to be all that different to it because I still don't think they want Lantern winning a Pro Tour. I don't think they want to see that again. I think the fact that it won a Grand Prix, now that it's won a Pro Tour...
I think we're going to go through the next 3 months and there's going to be a few additional modern GPs.
When's the next ban announcement?
In 10 days, I think.
You don't think there's any chance that we see a banning?
No.
Okay.
There's not a single calm head that normally is in this conversation that's asking for a banning of a card from this deck. I think they're going to let it go through the three-month period we're going to see of GPs until the next set comes out. Once that set comes out, there will be a new banning announcement, and then that'll be the actual response to this situation, and it's going to be very much based on how GPs go. If every GP from now on is inundated with Lantern Control players that are either playing slowly, so causing problems with the deck, or it's just better than they're expecting and it does really well in every tournament, then they'll probably need to answer it. If, you know, the first tournament, a bunch of people play it, they realize like they're bad at it, it doesn't do that well, and then the next GP, not too many people are playing it because it didn't do well the last GP, and we move on with our lives, then Lantern will be around and it'll one time, you know, sometimes win a major tournament. Obviously, a Pro Tour is the place where Lantern is going to be best positioned because you have the best players on the planet playing. So and Lantern is a deck that heavily favors the better player.
And it's a hyper, hyper, hyper meta call because, like,
totally.
It's one of the best players in the world. You're like, okay, so the likelihood of this deck getting smashed is relatively low. But also, if I can angle this to the super, super boring win and I can stomach having to play this for as long as I'm going to play it, I can win 50K.
and we had Zach Elsick on the podcast right after he originally top 16 with it. And then he literally, the next GP, he won it with this deck. And that was kind of like where Lantern came from. And what he mentioned that, you know, one of his worst matchups is Burn. But Burn in this field was 33%. 33% of this metagame was Burn decks. So
right.
Not 33. Sorry. 8%. 33 players were playing Burn at the Pro Tour. So the... And that might be off by a few counts of people. The metagame wasn't necessarily not toxic towards Lantern. Lantern was a known quantity. The last major GP that wasn't a team event, everyone was like, man, Lantern's the deck to beat. Get ready for it. And then it didn't win it. But
yep.
And Tron was the deck of that weekend.
Right.
Partly because Tron is a good matchup against Lantern. Emrakul.
Yeah, it's a good card.
Tron's not always playing Emrakul now. But whatever. Beyond that, the real thing to look out for here is... You know, the deck itself has a lot of different things that are problematic. Like, I wouldn't recommend a person pick this deck up.
Oh, God, no.
I think, A, it's a specific deck and your friends are all going to hate you. But, B, I think that in general, this is a deck that has the potential of being banned. Anyone who says it's not going to be banned ever is just fooling themselves. And everyone who says it should be banned immediately is also not reacting correctly. I think the correct answer is let's wait and see. And I would be tentative to pick a deck up like this if I was a person who would get annoyed that my deck was banned for out from under me.
So let's just talk really quickly here about the premier two cards in the deck that are worth money. Because there's two, I think, right? It's Mox Opal and Snaring Bridge.
I mean, as a mana bait, that are exclusive to that deck?
No, no, that are like those are like the money cards that, like, if you have to spend...
I think Blackleaf Cliffs is $30 right now. Like, there's a bunch of mana...
Well, okay,
like,
but Blackleaf just spiked, and the reason Blackleaf Cliffs spiked is because Blackleaf Cliffs is now played in, like, four Premier decks. So, like, sure. If you were to buy Blackleaf Cliffs...
You're fine.
You're not buying it,
well, I think if you buy Mox Opal, you're fine. I think... The question is of the main cards in this deck, which one would you...
So mana bases you should never be afraid of, because mana bases will be useful all throughout Modern.
Totally.
So,
unless you're Tron.
Yeah. Mox Opal and Snaring Bridge are the two cards that are, like, not played in that many decks. They're played in a few. And should you be hesitant to buy into those cards if you're buying this deck?
The problem is that I would say there's three cards...
Affinity
didn't maybe
top
four
eight,
cards
so.
That I would pick that could be banned from the deck, and those are two on that list. I don't think Mox Opal gets banned unless it's because of Affinity. I think Affinity could cause Mox Opal to get banned, and someday it might.
We've talked about it a lot, yeah.
But I don't think Lantern... I think if Affinity is too strong, and if Affinity won this Pro Tour, then we'd be looking at a situation where Mox Opal is banned because it kind of hits two birds with one stone.
Yep.
It's the reason that I think one of the other cards that is high on everyone's list to get banned is the, I'm forgetting what it's called, green one mana.
Ancient Stirrings.
The idea behind it is that it's a very powerful cantrip in Modern, where they've actively banned most other powerful cantrips. And because Tron is a deck that other people wouldn't mind seeing it take a little hit to the knee. You know, it's a deck that people are like, maybe this deck is too good. And people hate get playing against it, so seeing both of them kind of take a little bit of a crack.
I didn't know that was a $3 cantrip.
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah, surprises
it's
me.
It's very good. It's probably the best cantrip in Modern, which is problematic in green, so there's even a color philosophy issue here. So, like, the fact that this card, that's a card that could be banned. And then the last one, but Bridge from Below, not Bridge from Below, and Snaring Bridge is obviously problematic, and... In Modern, there aren't another ton of decks that play it. Now, I think that's probably it's because it's underutilized. So it's the most unique to this deck specifically. The other thing is that's a card that's good in older formats, and it's been expensive forever. I don't think this deck is the reason it's at the price it's at.
So my answer to that question would be, of the five cards that we're talking about, six now, if you include Ancient Stirrings, that are, like, realistic possibilities for bannings, both Opal and Ensnaring Bridge probably pretty much maintain their value whether or not a different card in the deck gets banned. Even if Ensnaring Bridge was to get banned from Modern, it's probably still going to stay relatively expensive. Mox Opal would take a hit because it's like $66. It's probably like a $30 card if it gets banned.
I think it goes down to 20.
Maybe.
It's not really, like, yes, a Legacy Affinity decks play it, but it's not that played in older formats,
so maybe.
And it's not a it's not a commander staple.
So maybe then Opal's the card. Maybe that's the one card to be afraid of. But Affinity didn't even top 8 the Pro Tours. The likelihood of that being the ban target is low. The rest of the cards in the deck, the other four, would be Codex Shredder, Lantern of Insight, War of Invention, or Ancient Stirrings.
Well, the thing is that first off, Wizards has stated publicly that they, when banning cards, do not want to totally murder a deck. And I believe that getting rid of Ensnaring Bridge, Lantern of Insight, or Codex Shredder directly murders this deck.
So,
a card that I would actually point at is a good one to maybe get rid of to see what happens is Pyxis.
Yeah, it's fine, but the deck existed and wasn't playing Pyxis in the beginning.
Correct, but the reason it's playing it is because it deals with all of the hate cards that come out against the deck. The fact that you can fight against Ancient Grudges.
I'll give a quick shout out to somebody who called into the Anchor Station because I was going to play this call, and mm-hmm. I probably still will call it. Edward Carolyn called in and said, War of Invention is too good. Felipe Luce said, yeah. Ban Lantern of Insight. Now, the War of Invention play, I listened to the call, and I thought about this a lot. It's in line with a lot of the bannings we've seen. Powerful tutors in Modern are not something they are that super thrilled with.
Correct.
We have seen them ban them in the past. The biggest reason that War of Invention is so good in that deck is because they're able to play one-ofs of powerful sideboard cards in this deck, have access to them at instant speed in the main.
Sure.
Which means things like Witchbane Orb or, you know, Graft Digger's Cage they become cards that just shut certain decks down.
Right.
And all of a sudden, this deck's playing five of them at instant speed.
Right.
So that, to me, if you really wanted to make the deck a little bit more like what it was before it was just a straight-up tier one deck, would be ban War of Invention.
Yeah, War of Invention definitely is a card that I can see them getting rid of. It doesn't kill the deck. It keeps the deck alive, which is they don't want to do. Like, Lantern of Insight is a card they... Unless they're like, this deck needs to go away, period. We're getting rid of it. Ban War of Invention. Or they happen to print a creature that is a creature that is able to be played in the deck that does the same thing, so that in at least in that situation, you're giving it a weaker, more right. answerable thing to play its game plan. But I think getting rid of Lantern or Bridge murders the deck.
Yep.
Getting rid of Mox Opal unnecessarily hurts Affinity at a point where Affinity doesn't currently need to be hurt. Like, I don't think anyone needs Affinity. Affinity could win two GPs this year, and I still wouldn't probably think it needs to be banned.
I also think that Lantern of Insight is hurt a lot less by a Mox Opal ban than Affinity is. I think that Mox Opal slows down the deck.
Right.
But I don't think that it, like, destroys the deck. I just think it makes them a half turn slower and...
No, yeah, the reason Mox Opal is even really under consideration is because it's in Affinity, and people were already talking about possibly being banned from Affinity if Affinity is too good. If it is not too good, this deck is maybe more problematic from a time perspective, and I don't see them just straight up murdering the deck because I think it's something they like, and a lot of people are supportive of. It's really cool. Like, look at this top eight. We're going to get into it next, and it's like every single one of these decks is really, really, really sweet, and including Lantern, and the fact that this one is great. Like, I don't think everyone should be as angry about it as they are. And the real thing to keep in consideration, the real thing Wizards is going to be paying attention to is, does this ruin tournament play?
And honestly, the answer to that question is maybe. I mean, watching this top eight was so close to so sick to watch, and then Lantern was in it, and the finals was awful. The finals was horrible to watch. It was like a totally miserable set of Magic games. So, like, there is that. But let's talk about the rest of the decks in the top eight. Let's talk about the rest of the decks in the top eight.
Sure.
So, the remaining decks in the top eight, you've got two copies of Five Color Humans. You've got a copy of Mardu Pyromancer, which made the finals, piloted by a friend of the podcast, Jerry Thompson. You've got a blue-red Pyromancer deck. You've got an Abzan deck. You have black-red Hollow One. Is that all the decks? Did I just name them?
Traverse Shadow.
And Traverse Shadow.
Lantern Control.
And Lantern Control. So, pretty diverse top eight. And as you said, four pretty established archetypes and four... sort of slightly, I think we were going to rank the wild, weird excitement of the decks. I think Hollow One is pretty clearly the most exciting deck in the top eight.
Hollow One is the by far most left field craziness.
Did you see Goblin Lore as a $15 yes. uncommon?
Yes.
I didn't even know that card existed. Had you heard of it?
Every time I've done the, like, I'm going to read every card in Modern for a deck, but I never took it. Like,
I've never, I played 10th edition limited, and I don't remember that card.
Oh, yeah.
I don't own one. I don't know how that's even possible. I open, like, boxes of that set.
I don't know. Mardu Pyromancer is also probably my second
pick. Those would be the two, yeah.
So we did a poll, both out of two polls. One was out of the new decks in the PTRX top eight that are new, which are you most excited to try out? And the answers, the questions were available were Mardu Pyromancer, Black Red Hollow One, and Blue Red Pyromancer, which I know has existed forever, but, like, I don't think that we've ever seen... Thing in the Ice top eight of Pro Tour.
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been that many Modern Pro Tours.
Yeah, that's fair. Of those three options, Mardu Pyromancer at 50%. I think this is actually the deck coming out of this Pro Tour that's going to be the most explosive and most played
by people around the world. Very excited about this deck before the Pro Tour.
Correct.
I remember playing a version of this that I was trying to put together for that, like, FNM like a month and a half ago, and getting a lot of excited people. Like, people love the idea of playing off the beaten path color combos, and especially ones they've been trying to make work for so long.
Right. Every color combo that doesn't see a lot of play, if there's an opportunity to make it a real thing, people are excited for it. What's cool about this is also Mardu Pyromancer finally gives people that want to play mid-range decks the ability to do so without playing Snapcaster Mage or Tarmogoyf.
Right.
There's no card really in this deck that's like a $80 to $100 card for now. But even, like, you know, Pyromancer itself is a an uncommon. So like it's not kind
and
of
it's
in the
a
same
cheap one now because it got reprinted in Eternal Masters, so it's like less than a buck.
Right. So like the deck itself is not that expensive, and it allows players to play mid range in a way that they've never really had the opportunity to do so before, which is really kind of exciting. On top of it, it's really sick.
Yeah. So you know, just to be sure, yeah, young Pyromancer is $1. That's, yep. Yeah. Crazy.
Is there anything else in the deck that
that's expensive? I mean, you know, Fatal Pushes I think are like still like $9 probably.
Yeah,
no,
that's
seven.
Not, that's like
there's
that's
seven.
Like a regular.
I mean, Blackleaf Cliffs skyrocketed. It's $30 now.
Sure, but that's like a land.
Yeah.
Buy lands.
I think Lingering
Bedlam
Souls,
Reveler is probably going to be a $10 card, maybe.
I think
Collective
Souls
Brutality.
Is, Souls is really cheap, I think.
Yeah, it's been reprinted into the ground because like every dual deck that had black white in it for 5 years
cents.
Had it in it.
Yeah. Bedlam Reveler for sure.
Obviously, Inquisition and Thoughtseize.
Brutality is like $15.
Has Blood Moon in it. Blood Moon's the top end. But even that's pretty cheap right now.
Yeah, it's like $25, I think. $22.
And the lands are like, other than Blackleaf Cliffs, you're playing the cheap lands. You're playing Sacred Foundry, Blood Crypt, Bloodstained Mire, and Marsh Flats.
Yeah, even Marsh Flats, I just got three of those, and they're like, I think like $30 or $35
plays
maybe.
One Full Mirror Mage, like if you really need to get there, like
$31 for Marsh
Flats. One Liliana of the Veil.
Yeah.
That's probably the top end.
Definitely,
I mean, like,
the top end.
But like, that's
compared
one.
Compared to what the Abzan deck that Reed Duke is playing costs, it's not even close.
Let's see. Where's Reed Duke's list? Because those are the real comparable ones. These are the two black, green, and big bunny ears, quotation marks. These are the two absent, you know, black-green decks.
Well, that's not a black-green deck, though.
Martin. I know that was the bunny ears around it.
But a bit of mid-range deck.
They're the Thoughtseize followed by Threats, followed by Liliana of the Veil. Yeah. four Liliana of the Veil.
Yeah.
One Liliana of the Last Hope. Which is
four
like
Liliana of the Veil
card.
Is like worth more than the entire Pyromancer deck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Four Tarmogoyf.
Yeah.
Four Dark Confidant.
Yep.
Two Scavenging Ghouls, two Grim Flayer, one Tireless Tracker, four Inquisition, close like two Thoughtseize. Technically, it's playing one less Thoughtseize, though. You can buy Thoughtseize for $17
right
now.
It's playing four Verdants.
Two Maelstrom Pulse, three Lingering Souls, Fatal Push, two Abrupt Decay, two main deck Neil Spell Bomb, which is tight.
Yeah,
and then the lands that you need, they're all really expensive. Like the difference between these two decks, and I guarantee playing them in a tournament, you're not going to feel like your one's that much better than the other one. Like,
well, clearly, considering in a tournament, one of them just got the second place and the other one didn't. So, granted, like, you know, the quality of player, but then again, it's
Reed Duke is really good.
I mean, I was not to say that Jerry Thompson or Reed Duke is better or worse. That wasn't my point. I think the quality of player being. I don't think that like the average Joe Schmo at an FNM is like, should I buy into a deck? I'm like, well, look at Reed Duke's results. That should be a good indicator of what deck you should play.
Yes, it's the Corey Burkhart effect of no one should play Grixis Control unless your name is Corey Burkhart.
Speaking of which, Corey Burkhart got like 13th place at the PT. I think playing Grixis, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I can't imagine playing anything else in Modern.
Well, this is what we talked about forever with Pro Tours, is that... You know, Wizards before and this time they have listened. I don't know if it was to us, but to someone. And forever their philosophy was, we need to ban cards because a Pro Tour needs to be exciting. And that needs to be new decks that people want to see what the new decks are going to be. Otherwise, they're not going to watch it. But in reality, I don't know a single person who's not excited to see Corey Burkhart play Grixis Control. Because it's great to have players have... Like, I'm actually more disappointed that...
Finkel
didn't play Storm than I think of any other disappointment from this entire Pro Tour. Is like, I want to see pros play decks that they're so good at because it's the same reason, like, when I watch basketball, like, college basketball is fine. I know, it's a sports metaphor.
This is great.
You know, when I do watch it, a person who doesn't care that much about sports, but even when I do care about sports, I want to watch the Michael Jordans of the world. I want to watch and people do. People want to watch LeBron James. You want to see the best player playing the best possible game, doing the best they can.
Yeah.
Like, that is what sells the most basketball tickets.
Yeah.
And the Modern Pro Tour can be that because it's not, which pro came up with the best deck? It's, or which pro team came up with the best deck even, which is more what happens. It's, which player, like, how good is Corey with Grixis compared to Reed Duke with Junk compared to,
John Finkel with Storm
compared to LSV and weird combo decks. But, you know, like, there's all these different players that you can literally just point at and be like,
They like to play this. Yeah,
yeah. They do the same thing. Like Li Shi Tian and Blue Red Blood Moon decks. Like.
Yeah. So, no, it's awesome. And I think it's one of the most exciting things about Modern is that, like, yeah, you spend all this time learning all the percentage points and getting so proficient with the deck that I love to see these players. But then you also see it's a good indicator of kind of the difference between a player who's locked into what they like to do and somebody like Paul Rizzo, who admittedly doesn't really. He's not somebody who has, like, a severe identity when it comes to decks. Like, traditionally, he's, you know, he's an aggro player usually.
Sure.
But he'll change it, like, you know, deck to deck. And then in this Pro Tour, he was playing a blue-red Madcap experiment deck with Blood Moon in the main deck.
Right. There was a ton of, actually, Madcap kind of overtook Through the Breach Emrakul this tournament. Which, like, obviously, these are the type of tournaments that Affinity and Burn are going to be heavily represented.
Right, and that's what you definitely want, is to be able to have an ace in the hole to not
You
just
can lose after Through the Breaching Emrakul.
Yeah.
And you can lose after Madcap experimenting, but it's a lot harder.
Yep. So let's talk about some of the rest of the decks in here. You had 2 5-color humans decks. The 5-color humans deck we've talked about at length. And so I think the reason that deck is so good is that it is a tempo deck. Like, I was thinking about this. Is this an aggro deck? Is this a swarm deck? Is it a tempo deck? It is a tempo deck because you have 4 copies each of creatures. Really, if you include Thalia, which is kind of doing something similar, you have 12 two-drops that are slowing your opponent down by at least a turn, and Reflector Mage does the same thing, which means, like, the 1-2 punch of playing Kitesail Freebooter on turn 2 into Meddling Mage on turn 3 is a classic tempo play. It's like, I'm not going to stop you. I'm just going to slow you down and give myself the advantage by enough turns to kill you before you can get online.
I would say tempo is the wrong word to me because tempo very specifically leads you in a different direction. I think this is a aggressive Hate Bears deck. I think, like, Hate Bears is probably the most comparable.
You don't think that Hate Bears is basically a tempo deck?
No, you're playing a bunch of creatures that you're attacking that are 2/2s. Like, it's an aggressive. You're an aggro deck. You're just okay. You're like a tempo deck to me needs small condensement of threats and high condensement of interaction to protect those threats. And that's not really what this deck is doing. This is playing a bunch of cards that are answers that also are attacking at the same time. And that's, I think, the difference to me between the two. It's like, this is going to stop you from doing what you're doing while it's attacking. Tempo is like, I'm getting card disadvantage with my Delver of Secrets, but because it came down so early, I can protect it, and it's going to kill you while I stop you what you're trying to do.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it's more value oriented, I guess, is kind of how I would differentiate versus cool. Tempo, which is more control based. I don't know, but I still think, like, it's good. I mean, obviously, the question going to this Pro Tour was, do you play Collecting Company or do you play Aether Vial?
The versions in the top 8? I know for a fact at least one of them was playing the Aether Vial plan. I think they both were. I don't think either of the Collected Company player either version was the Coco version. If you want to double check that, I mean, I watched a decent amount of 5-color games.
Javier Dominguez was playing Aether Vial.
Yep. I watched, I think, a bunch of Javier Dominguez games.
And Andrea Mengucci?
Also was playing Aether Vial.
Yeah. So I'm really proud because I think I said both of their names pretty good.
Yeah, you were dead on.
Pretty good.
You did a great job.
Really happy about that.
Yeah.
I've been in a lot of Italian restaurants. I don't know if they're Italian.
Do you want a cookie or something?
Always. Why? Are you offering me cookies? Can I have one?
I was congratulating you for saying their names right.
Yeah, there's cookies in the kitchen.
Yeah, that's
nice. I expect one when this podcast is done. Traverse Shadow. Do you want to just go through the other decks? Or continue with humans?
We'll just talk about it for a second.
Obviously, this was the big thing coming into this tournament. It was like 10% of the field almost. It was the most played deck by a wide margin.
Yeah, what's interesting about this deck is that, and we've talked about this a lot. We talked about it on the show the other day. But what this deck does open the possibility for is, going forward, we're going to see more 5-color tribal decks. It's just going to happen.
Sure.
And I don't have a good beat on, like, is there a better one than humans right now? Because, like, humans between Mare and Thalia's Lieutenant has, you know, a really, like, 8 really good 2-drop lords plus, like, 12 really good 2-drop disruption creatures. It's like doing all the right thing. It checks every box. You know, Mantis Rider is just a powerhouse 3-drop.
Right. Right now, the only cards I can, like, the slivers, maybe, especially if Dominaria has them, we're about to go back to.
They're not as disruptive is the difference. That's what this deck has going for it.
Some of the disruption and what they lack in disruption,
not
they have better hate cards.
Not on 2. That's the that's the thing. Okay. Is on 2 mana.
Well, but I think they're more of a Collected Company deck.
Yeah. Okay. That's
versus
fair.
Versus an Aether Vial deck. I think if that's a real question, Slivers takes advantage of Collected Company so much better than humans. The fact that you're getting 2 3-drops off of a 4-drop so consistently is, like, really important. And I do think that makes a reason for it to exist. And, you know, Slivers was existing before this whole situation happened of unclaimed territory being printed alongside, what's the other main thing? Kitesail Freebooter for humans. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting combo of cards that really made this possible.
Yes, I think Sedge Sliver is probably the most interesting, of the collected company slivers that we would see. The fact
makes
that
everything bigger.
Well, yeah, it makes everything bigger. So obviously you have this great three mana lord, but on top of that, it's a three mana lord that then makes all of your creatures be able to regenerate. It makes the sort of inevitability of a creature matchup or any kind of like chump blocking. It like blanks Fatal Push, blanks Lightning Bolt.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is also a tribe that has the ability to give everything, not hexproof, but something close to it. You know, the mana leak hexproof. Harmonic Sliver is an insane card.
Let me think, which one? Harmonic? Oh, I know Harmonic Sliver. Yeah, of course.
Yeah, but like, again, there are decks that literally can't beat. Like, I've had four Harmonic Slivers in, when we were playing Birthing Pod.
Yeah.
I would have four Harmonic Slivers just in my sideboard, just straight up, because the second one is really good, and the third one just wrecks Affinity forever.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest issue is that, you know, everything we're talking about for the most part in terms of the high power level are three drops. There's 18 two-drop slivers in Modern, period, total, ever. Not even, I'm sorry. There's 17, I think. 16, I'm looking at some of these that aren't actually slivers. And the ones that are totally legit that we would absolutely play would be like, obviously, you would play the two muscle slivers. So there's the white one, which is Sinew Sliver, and there's the green one, which I think is called Predatory Sliver. So, you know, you have those, which is great. Like, I don't think anybody is arguing that you don't have the power. But then on top of that, you know, you have the Gemhide Sliver, which is also Mana Weft Sliver. So you can fix your mana there. But I don't know if this deck necessarily just wants to fix its own mana. You don't really have that many power slivers at two. And that's, I think, the biggest problem with this deck is that as much as it's a collected company deck...
I mean, you have two lords. I mean, that's...
That's what I just said.
That's what Merfolk has.
Yeah, but we're comparing this to humans. So if you're going to go five colors and you're going to try to justify it...
I think you compare it to any tribal deck. I don't know why. I mean, like, humans is doing something different than what Slivers would be doing. So humans is playing the Hate Bears game, where Slivers is playing much more of a, I'm making all my guys 7/7s and attacking you.
But then I feel like you would 100 just play Merfolk 100%.
But you get much better hate cards at it. Like the hate cards you get, the versatility out of Slivers is just stronger.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fair. I don't think that card's legal.
No, it's not. I wasn't pointing. That was a sliver on my phone I was cycling through. That wasn't necessarily a specific one. For those who are wondering, I showed him Acidic Sliver.
Yeah. I do love the idea of being able to have Dark Heart Sliver in your deck against aggro decks. That seems pretty good.
Diffusion Sliver makes all of your things harder to kill. That's the thing Merfolk doesn't. Yeah. You know, you need a 3-drop to do that, and here it's a 2-drop. I think this is a card that I would definitely be thinking. You can get all of them, have haste for two. They do a lot. Moving past slivers, back to humans. I think this deck is just, you know, a bit pillar of the metagame for now on. Moving forward, people are going to be playing it. I think in the other poll we ran, which was the established deck poll, Abzan beat Lantern Control, that beat humans, that beat Traverse Shadow. The least amount of people were excited about Traverse Shadow, which is interesting. I think people are just sick of Death Shadow.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good deck. This version of it is combining all the best elements. This is the five-color version, right? This is the one that's playing all the best stuff from Grixis plus the best stuff from the Jund version.
Traverse
and
Shadow?
Taking advantage of the Traverse package. So Correct. It's like, basically, you basically have all of the sweetest Grixis cards, but then you also have your Traverse with Mishra's Bauble, like, get anything I need plan, and you're just winning with Team or Battle Rage. I think it slims down a little bit on some of the hyper tempo plan that the Grixis version was playing. So it's not playing as many copies of Stubborn Denial, right?
It has three copies of Stubborn Denial.
Oh, it still is playing three.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah. Two Team Rip Battle Rage, four Mishra's Bauble, two Prep Decay, one Dismember, Stubborn. It's just, it's like, oh, I can play all the lands. It plays one Grim Flayer. This is really just, it's like green, it's Jund, Death Shadow, Splashing Blue. For Stubborn Denial, Snapcaster Mage, and that's it.
Yeah. So it's...
Even in the sideboard? Not a lot. Yep, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, so this deck was sweet, kind of boring. Big props to making a top 8 with it. It's an awesome set of sweet cards. I don't think this deck really runs the risk of getting anything banned anymore, though. This just feels like a...
deck that exists. It's the new Fort. Yeah. Death Shadow is just a new Tarmogoyf.
Yeah, it's just this... It's, you know, this is another sort of mid-range deck now.
Yep. Ken Yukihiro, though, Black Red Hollow one.
Yeah. Is this the last deck, or we forgot to talk about Reed Duke's Abzan deck?
We talked about it for a hot second. There's Blue Red Pyromancer too. We have a few decks still.
Okay.
But we're doing this one. I'm not saving it for last. Bloodgast times four. Flameblade Adept times four.
Yeah.
Flamewake Phoenix times four.
Dope.
Gurmag Angler times three. Four Hollow One. Four Street Wraith. One Tassiger. Four Burning Inquiry. Two Collective Brutality. Four Faithless Looting. Four Goblin Lore. Four Lightning Bolt.
So sick.
That's the deck. It's pretty much all four ofs plus two Collective Brutality, and technically Gurmag Angler and Tassiger is a four of together.
I watched several of his games. It's just like this deck does. The reason this deck is good is, and again, I use this example way too much because it's just a deck that I played a lot. So, and it was trying to do something weird. But the old Superior Burning Coco deck was like a deck that wanted to get a 5/6 for two mana. It wanted to play that. So you had to have a minimum of 12 ways to be able to get that thing into play reliably. It was like you can't hope that you have 8 ways. You have to be able to consistently, you know, get almost a quarter of your deck. And so that was what I relied on. This deck does something similar in that it wants to get Hollow One into play on turn one or turn two, multiple Hollow Ones. Burning Inquiry, Faithless Looting, Street Wraith combo, that can get it into play on turn one. On turn two, Goblin Lore can get it into play just on its own. But also, if you collect a Brutality and you discard multiple cards to Brutality, if you have set up for it, you just get Hollow One into play.
There's a lot... The Hollow One game plan is like really cool. Obviously, Street Wraith is really good at it. The Flamewake Phoenix is the most surprising card out of this deck by a wide margin that no one saw coming.
It's powerful. I saw him play a lot of it. It's really, really, really good.
Yeah.
Surprisingly good.
Yep.
But it's because you're playing a free 4/4. That's 2/2. Why.
It's
so
a 2/2.
What?
It's a 2/2.
No, I'm saying Hollow One.
Oh, Hollow One is a 4/4. Flamewake Phoenix is a 2/2. Flameblade Adept is obviously also really good with all these cards because putting that in on turn one and then casting Goblin Lore is like bonkers.
Attack for four. Attack and then, for four. Yeah. So Flamewake Phoenix is pretty good. It is probably the cutest of all the cards that we're talking about. So it strikes me as a card that probably saw play at the Pro Tour, but that if people experiment with this deck and play a lot with this deck, this would be the first card that I would guess somebody would find a better thing to play then.
I don't know if I agree with you. This is like a weirdly unique effect, and it also is a four of. Like, that's like something like often you see like, oh, maybe this deck doesn't need Tassiger.
Right.
Maybe just like play four Gurmag Angler and be happy with it. You know, then you don't have to splash the extra lands to make it worth it. Or maybe this deck really wants more Collective Brutalities over Faithless Lootings, or more Collective Brutalities over Goblin Lores or Lightning Bolts. You know, like there's like that area where there's only two of Collective Brutality and that card sounds really good in this deck. But like, why play four if it's not really good?
Right.
And then win a Pro Tour with it.
Yeah, it's
like
fair.
It flies, which is something this deck probably needs a lot of the time. Like, I don't know. I'm not sure if there's other effects that really accomplish this at the same level it needs it. And yeah, this deck is really tight. There's a lot of four. You know, whenever you see a deck that's almost all four ofs, it's like fascinating.
Yeah, I agree.
This is probably the deck on this entire list that I'm most excited to try out.
Hollow One? Oh, yeah. I mean, you had tried out the Vengevine versions of Dredge decks, and you would. I think you were interested in Hollow One because I'm pretty sure when it got spoiled, you bought four foil copies.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
You have four foils?
Yes.
Are they worth anything?
I don't know.
They must have gone up.
Probably.
I would have to think. That card's sick. So the last deck that we should talk about, we could probably avoid Abzan. We like mentioned the list.
Sure.
Reduke's a master.
Yes. Yeah, he's really good. And Abzan's a good deck always. It's a 50 against the field. It's why pros like playing Jund.
It's interesting.
It's Jund.
It is interesting that like that's what a player of his caliber decided to play. It was just like, I'm going to play this like super safe deck that has like lots of graveyard hate and the ability to just like win against anything.
Yeah.
He just has, I think he had played a lot of those green based mid range decks, so he just decided to go with it again.
Sure.
The blue
red I want people to play decks they're good at.
Yeah, the blue red pyromancer deck, on the other hand, is sweet. You notice that he was playing, I think, four copies of Ancestral Vision in the deck? Pretty sure.
Three
Ancestral Vision.
Mm-hmm. I mean, here's the thing. Has there been a modern Pro Tour where a blue red deck has not been in the top 8?
That's a good question.
I'm pretty sure Leash ETN top 8ed 3 of them with Blue Moon.
Right, and then the old
Snapcaster Mage existed.
Splinter Twin
is a thing. So, like, I think that This deck is obviously really cool. Young Pyromancer in another deck in the top eight. Thing of the Ice is a sweet card.
Totally.
He's playing two Roast in the main, which I think is really cool. One of Braid. So there's like a bunch of really cool cards here. But this is a blue-red list, and that's playing four threats and a bunch of spells that trigger those threats into good things.
Yeah, for sure.
It's like definitely the best.
Yeah, I mean, it's sweet.
There's a reason blue-red is probably the best color combo. It's blue-red or black-green, right? So,
I mean, we didn't... So what's interesting about this is that...
It's hard.
This deck is eerily similar to blue-red Delver from Treasure Cruise. From Treasure Cruise era. It's not the same deck.
Sure.
It's certainly a little different. And
it's got Ancestral Vengeance instead.
One of the questions that we, you know, pondered this week was what...
Pretty sure you mean opt.
Yeah. What? Yes, that's funny. Is that why is all of a sudden Young Pyromancer a card again? Why is that card all of a sudden in Modern like a ubiquitous card that people are playing with and they have somehow decided it's a card advantage engine again? And I think the answer is that in the last year, we had Fatal Push and Opt printed into Modern. And I think just those, even though we lost Gitaxian Probe, I think the fact that we have now maybe the best removal spell in the format in a color that we didn't have it in is that's obviously very powerful. And the fact that you have an instant speed card that pairs well with Snapcaster Mage, I think it kind of pushes things over the edge. I think that that's what it took. I think it just took those two cards being printed, a slight shift in the metagame, and all of a sudden, Young Pyromancer's a deck.
I really want Wizards to print Young Pyromancer into a standard set or into a master set at rare. That'd make me really happy.
Why?
Because then it could be the fifth card.
You think that it just isn't the fifth card just because of its rarity?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I do. I think if that card was rare, it would be the fifth card.
I think it is the fifth card. It just doesn't... It feels like it took a while for it to catch up. But it just... It so much more completely does what the red... It's a 2-1 for 2 that generates card advantage. Like...
It's not a 2-1 for 2. Stoneforge Mystic isn't either.
It doesn't generate card advantage. Never mind.
Not the definition. But I think it is it. I think it needs...
Did you say it is it?
Yeah. Nice. I think it needs to be rare. It needs to be printed at a rare rarity somewhere. And I think that a master set just printing it at rare would make everyone really happy. And I don't think it's ridiculous for that to be a rare and a master set because this card's really good.
Should probably just have been printed at rare when it was first printed, honestly.
Yeah. The world would be a better place.
Yeah, there would be no reason.
Young Pyromancer was a rare.
Yeah, much better place.
Because of this one reason.
Free Young Pyromancer.
or raise it to its new status.
Yeah, so I think that pretty much wraps us up, unless we want to talk about...
Lantern Control again?
No, we already did that.
Mardu Pyromancer, we didn't really go into the list at all. It's really good.
Yeah, we did.
Bedlam Reveler. Lingering Souls.
That is one interesting thing to talk about. And that was a focus of this pro tour. And it does seem to be a lot of what the pros are focusing on. So with Fatal Push being so played, there does seem to be a focus on playing creatures that you can that cost five or more that you can cast for less than five. So like that's what you saw a lot of it in this pro tour. You're seeing tons and tons of Gurmag Anglers and tons of Tassigers and tons of Hollow Ones and Bedlam Revelers. Like, it's a trend that we're seeing. Any way that you can cheat a creature that costs 5 CMC or more in a play for less than 5 CMC is good. Because it's going to dodge the format's most played removal spell. And so it's why Bedlam Reveler went from being a 79-cent card to an $8 card overnight. And I think people will continue to look for ways to exploit that. Wait. Hooting Mandrills is going to break through. You're going to see it. It's going to happen. All of a sudden, people are going to be playing it. It's not going to be surprising, especially with Young Pyromancer tokens running around. It's just going to happen. We're just seeing more and more of it.
Okay, so I have a question.
Yeah.
What's the most played removal spell in the top eight of the Pro Tour?
Played removal spell top eight of the Pro Tour?
Should have confirmed that Bolt is not it, but yeah.
I would think, based on the decks that made the top eight, that it would have to be Fatal Push.
Collective Brutality.
Oh, funny.
By like five.
Yeah, there's like 14 copies in the top eight or something.
It's kind of a card that under the radar is probably sculpting Modern more than people are giving it credit to.
Card's great. I love that card. Yep. I think it's fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wouldn't take Burn to a tournament right now.
Yeah.
Single-handedly, Burn sounds like a bad idea.
It also just keeps getting more expensive, right? Like, yeah. Brutality is like $15, $16
now. It's hit the bottom. It's not going to go lower.
No, holy moly, Collective Brutality went to $28?
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me.
oh man, when we were sorting out our cards that I had borrowed from you, I was like, did I borrow Collective Brutality? And you were like, I don't know. And I was like, you know what? Thanks for letting me borrow these cards. You can just have this.
If I have four, I'll give it back.
Thanks.
If I don't have four, I'm keeping it.
Sweet. All right. Well, that's going to do it, guys.
For
thanks
the record,
for
I'm
listening.
I'm not a terrible person. Ben borrowed like $700 worth of cards for a year.
I'll probably do it again.
Yeah, so that's it for the day. That's the podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We want to make sure that you follow us on Twitter. I am at Kes Wiley.
I'm at Ben Bateman Media.
We're at the
MMCast. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you with my name. We're at the MMCast. You are on Facebook. Find the Facebook group. Find the Facebook group, the official Masters of Modern Facebook group. Congratulations to our new moderators. They will be announced on the page.
This week?
Yeah. Patreon.com/TheMMCast. Please help us out. Donate $1, $2, whatever you can do. It helps the show keep going. We lost a pair of headphones. We need to buy a new one.
We did.
And I need to buy some editing software because I'm taking over editing the podcast this week.
Woo!
So that's a thing. Anchor.fm/10MinutesModern.
And I will give three packs of Masters of Modern Master sets. I don't know which one.
Yeah.
To anyone who tags us and tags at Kes Toys and posts a picture of them hula hooping with ice hoops from Target.
Buy an ice hoop from Target, hula hoop with it, and post a picture, and Alex will send you like $50-$60 worth of magic cards. Easy to do.
Not like every person at random, but yeah.
One person.
All right.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening. Have a good one. We'll talk soon.
Bye.